Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hello and welcome to the relaunch of NBC Sports Rugby Podcast, The Scrum Down. I am your host with the most, Alex Corbacero, and it is great to be back. We have absolutely exciting news for this upcoming season. The Scrum Down pod is back. As you can see, it is in video. This is going to be all season long, weekly podcasts, tons of episodes. We'll either do in-person interviews on site when we're able to, or traditional sort of remote digital interviews. This week, we had to focus on the news of Worcester Warriors and the impending, looks like, financial ruin as the club, as they are on the brink of entering administration. I have none other than NBC Sports commentator, world rugby commentator, rugby pundit connoisseur, Rupert Cox on the pod. We were planning to talk more about the LA Sevens coming up this weekend. We're still going to get to that, but we really got to dive into this Worcester news story.
And we are joined by our first guest on this year's relaunch of the Scrum Down. First guest we've had on video. It has to be a good friend of the pod and NBC Sports, Rupert Cox. How's it going, mate? Great to have you on the show.
Oh, it's going really well, Alex. It's great to talk to you across the pond from where I am here in London. Great to catch up. And yeah, lots of stories going on in the world of rugby right now. Some exciting stuff on the field, not so much off it.
Exactly. And you know, the reason we had you lined up as our debut guest was to get ready for the LA Sevens this weekend. You know, you are one of the voices of World Rugby Sevens, and I want to get onto that later in this podcast. But we've got to talk about some of the pressing, imminent news in our sort of rugby sphere of influence here at NBC. Premiership Rugby, one of our properties. And it's in a little bit of disarray, Rupert, with the recent news of Worcester Warriors receiving a winding up notice from HMRC based to an unpaid tax bill. And the club is facing administration and cataclysmic effects for the players, fans, and owners alike, all going on at Worcester. You know, what have you heard so far? Maybe set the tone and we'll go from there.
Well, yeah, you mentioned HMRC. That's effectively the IRS in American language. They have pretty much put the club into administration. Worcester Warriors, who finished 11th in the Gallagher Premiership last season, new director of rugby, Steve Diamond, come in. Looked like they had a bright future in the coming seasons, but they've run out of money. They were surviving off a big handout from the UK government, as it was. And look, I mean, the first thing to say is it's a really sad situation potentially for all the players and for the staff at the club. A lot of these players and staff could be out of a job in a matter of days, hours even. And the situation's pretty grim. I mean, the owners of the club finally released a statement today, said they're working really hard behind the scenes to ensure that there can be some rugby at Six Ways where Worcester play their home games this season. I mean, that's a pretty grim statement to put out, that suggesting that they're on the precipice, and cataclysmic, I think, is the word you use. And I think that's absolutely right. It's a really serious situation. We've seen clubs in the Premiership go to the wall before. Previously, London Welsh, who yo-yoed up between the second division and the premiership before. Richmond, London Scottish have all gone into administration before. But you know, this is a club that's been steadfast in the premiership for a while now, and this is very bad news. And I think the rugby community is just hoping they can somehow find a way out of this. But as we look at it at the moment, it doesn't look like good news.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what's been going on. Obviously, you know, Premiership Rugby, initially all these clubs received an injection of funds from the CBC investment. That was supposed to bring a bit of financial security to the league, to the clubs, allow them to invest in infrastructure and other areas to try and make it a more sustainable business model going forward, as it is a tough slog in the Premiership to really run at a profit. But then also, you know, we had the coronavirus pandemic, where I believe up to 14 million is what is being potentially reported of aid was pumped into the club to keep it going. And then now, on top of that, facing a 6 million is what we're seeing reported. Nothing confirmed, but 6 million is roughly what is being reported as the tax bill that is outstanding at the moment. How have Worcester found themselves in this situation, Rupert? You know, other clubs, you know, were hit hard in the pandemic, but what's been the difference for Worcester here, do you think?
Well, I think all clubs share that the pandemic did hit them very hard. You know, these clubs operate on very small margins. You mentioned not many of the clubs in the Premiership operate at a profit. They do run off debt as things exist anyway. And a club like Worcester that have a pretty big wage bill, they just found themselves in this situation where the relatively new owners who took over from 2019, have found themselves in this situation. Look, I don't know the finer financial details of how they've got themselves or where they are, but what you've got to remember is you mentioned the £6 million mark. I mean, the salary cap in the Premiership now is only £5 million. So that's how much money you've got, which in American sporting franchise terms is tiny kind of money. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot to these clubs. So if all of a sudden you're $6 million in debt in terms of your tax bill alone and your salary cap to pay your players is only $5 million and every club is running right at the limit of that, it doesn't take a genius to work out that, you know, it only takes a downturn like a pandemic to put these clubs in real, real jeopardy. Now, look, there's a lot of talk, a lot of rumours about where some of the money's gone. Have the owners been putting the club's best interests at heart? Are they really just property developers that are trying to use the leverage of the club to try and serve their other business interests? I don't know. But where we are at the moment is that Worcester are days away from going into administration and ceasing to exist. It's a massive issue, obviously, for them as a club, but also in the wider scope of professional rugby in England, because they're one of the 13 teams in the Premiership. And the season's kicking off on the 9th of September, only a matter of weeks away. So this is a really serious problem. And we understand that Wasps are in a bit of strife as well, financially. You know, they're a team that have been in and around the semi-finals and the playoffs of the Premiership in recent seasons, one of the high-profile clubs in the country. So, you know, they're not alone, but their situation is pretty dire. And Steve Diamond said yesterday, he said, unfortunately, we're not in a situation where, you know, a knight in shining armour is going to be able to come in and rescue the situation, because there's a serious cost of living crisis going on in the UK at the moment. It's getting worse. Money's tight. This is part of a wider economic downturn, and it's going to be really hard for them to get out of this. But, you know, as I said, I think rugby people are just hoping they can find a way through. But at the moment, it doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good at all. And let's just talk a little bit about the owners, Colin Goldring and Jason Whittingham. They took over the club fully in 2019. Like you said, seem to have a bit more of an MO as property developers. And there's been some interesting revelations coming out in the last couple of days. You know, the day after the winding order was released, that, you know, it turned out that the owners sold the car park of Six Ways to another company that they owned for £50,000. Question marks over, you know, are they just trying to move assets out as the club is potentially liquidated or winding down, it really doesn't look good. And then, you know, you've got the owners who are only just releasing a statement, which is still very vague and giving nothing. And then you've got sort of players like Ollie Lawrence, you know, coming out in the public and speaking, and other guys like Ethan Waller, ex Worcester Warriors player, who's also chairman of the RPA, coming out and really criticizing the ownership group for some of these decisions, or at least the optics of the way they look from the outside in. We don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes, but it's not looking great, is it?
No, and there's another story that broke in the Telegraph newspaper this evening here in the UK, that there's a house where the academy players live in. These are the junior players in the club that are coming through the Worcester Warriors Academy system, and they all live in this big house together. And apparently that house has been repossessed because they missed their mortgage payments. So the bank's taken back that house. So all these young junior academy players have had to move out and find their own accommodation. You mentioned the car park, which has become a bit of a symbolic thing in this whole thing, effectively selling it back to themselves for 50 grand when the property is tangibly worth a lot more than that on paper. So, yeah, I mean, at best, it looks like shifting the deck chairs on the Titanic. At worst, it seems like a bit of business skullduggery going on in the background. And in the background of all of this is one of the great men of rugby, Cecil Duckworth, who owned and was president of Worcester Warriors Rugby Club for so many years. And it's never been a massive club financially. You know, they haven't been premiership winners. They've always sort of lived on the breadline. But he put his heart and soul into the club and you know, moved on and did all he could. And it just feels that, I mean, you mentioned Ollie Lawrence making a comment. He put out a Cowboys emoji, which he then qualified with a couple of following tweets, because, you know, he's one of their marquee players, suggesting that these guys who own the club are not perhaps putting the players, staff, coaches' interests at heart, but perhaps their own business interests. And that is the bad taste that leaves in the mouth this, I think. It doesn't necessarily feel like they are rugby people serving the rugby club, that they're perhaps in it for other reasons, and when things go to the wall, they're gonna, you know, look after their own backyard before looking after everybody else's. Yeah, it's not a good situation.
It's not. And you know, there's other things of assets, the training pitches. I believe some of those across the other side of the canal were sold in June for £350,000, and there really are question marks, because literally, Rupert, one of the only ways that you could potentially see a club getting out of a mess like this is a sell. You know, it was reported that they're roughly assets, property, club valued at around 16.7 million. But if you start just piecing off all the assets, the club's going to have no value and it's going to have no real way out of this mess. And, you know, that's what led players like Ollie Lawrence, and we talked a little bit about it, but I want to read his statement for those listening and viewing that maybe haven't seen it on social media. But he initially got a bit of notoriety for the cowboy emoji, but then Lawrence wrote on Twitter, "Before anyone decides to state / complain that I'm slating the reputation of the people that pay our wages, I'm really not. They invested in the club and tried to create change, so can't fault that. But Cecil Duckworth created a legacy for this club, and that is close to being tarnished currently. There just comes a point where people's careers, livelihoods, families are being affected, which I believe should be answered for. I have nothing but respect for the whole players and staff for continuing to pitch up every day with all this uncertainty. The rumour mill will continue, but it's above us now as to what happens. But for now, we'll crack on as a team and wait to see what unfolds." And I think, you know, that it doesn't sound great. And I think that's where we need to start taking this sort of discussion is, you know, what are the ramifications for the players? Worcester have a pretty big wage bill. They have some big names. Last year, they were bolstered by two British and Irish Lions coming in Rory Southern and Duan van der Merwe. And you've also got the likes of Ted Hill, Ollie Lawrence in the England scene, as well as a 45-man squad. You know, what is the potential future for these guys at the moment?
Well, it should have been a good one. I was lucky enough to be commentating on their round 26 game, their final round game against Bath at Six Ways at the end of last season. And they absolutely belted Bath. And it looked like, and they just won the Premiership Cup at London Irish a couple of weeks earlier. You know, they looked like a club that were really going somewhere on the field. The problem is that because of the new reduced salary cap, where are these players going to go if they are forced to look for other employment? You have players like Duane van der Merwe, Rory Sutherland, Ted Hill, the captain. Players are on, you know, big money. Ollie Lawrence, we've spoken about. The problem is that all the clubs are operating right at the limit of their £5 million salary cap. So unless the clubs get together and say, yeah, okay, we'll all agree to relax that so as these players can get employed, then there's going to be nowhere for them to go. Because you can't break the rules to accommodate a player who's used to, you know, earning big, big money just because, you know, a club's gone to the wall. And we understand that the word's coming out from PRL that the clubs aren't going to agree to that. Remember, this whole salary cap reduction in the first place down to 5 million came in because to prevent this kind of thing happening, to stop clubs getting into trouble. And also off the back of the Saracens salary cap scandal where they, you know, ultimately got relegated down to the Championship for overplaying players through properties and companies, and, you know, a story we know well. So they're not going to wind back that now. They're not going to, you know, say, okay, look, Worcester have gone to the wall, so we're going to change our tune and change the rules just so these guys can play. So who knows what's going to happen to these guys? It's going to be a really difficult situation. And they're the top pros we're talking about. But what about all the other guys? What about the, you know, the bread and butter players who are making up, you know, 90% of the roster at Worcester Warriors? Where are those guys going to go? You know, they've all got responsibilities themselves. Many of them got families and mortgages and that sort of thing. I mean, Nick Easter, who's just turned up to be the forwards coach, he's just bought a property in Worcester, you know, to work with Steve Diamond. I mean, you know, there are so many people who could potentially be affected by this. You know, it is akin to the factory doors closing in a small town, you know, and what does it do? What does it do to the people? At the end of the day, this is about people, and that's why it's really sad. So we're just hoping, you know, that there can be some solution found. I mean, we understand that, you know, HMRC and the Department of media can somehow find a way to help them to come back. But if there's no money there, there's no money there. And if the players and the staff don't get paid next month, then they're not going to turn up to work. And the season starts in a few weeks. So, yeah, there's huge ramifications. And, you know, currently we have a 13-team season in the Premiership. The Gallagher Premiership PRL, they would have to completely change the structure of the tournament. They would go back to a 12-team tournament. They'd have to reschedule everything. There's so much already organised. Teams have already started promoting their home games. Season tickets have been sold. Sponsors have put money in. You know, I mean, there's just so many moving parts to this. The knock-on effects of Worcester dropping out of the competition are enormous.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, a snowball, a domino effect that this is going to cause across the league. And just like focusing on those players a little bit still, and, you know, you think the big names will probably have offers somewhere, most likely abroad, because the Premiership, you know, needed unanimous consent to raise the salary cap, and that just doesn't seem plausible, like you said, with the way it is. I know that idea was floated to the ownership group or to the board, but I think it was decided what it seems most likely going to be not the case, with clubs having their own financial difficulties and restrictions. And some might want to do it and some might not. So to get that unanimous consent doesn't seem feasible. But then, like you said, there's 45 players at Worcester that are potentially out of a job. And there's already about 80 or 90 players that were in the Premiership last year, but due to the salary cap reductions, are unable to find a job at the moment. So now you've got an even larger pool to scrap from. You know, for these guys, it's going to be a really tough slog to try and find, you know, a new permanent vocation, and especially without having to move your whole family and livelihood to, you know, somewhere where you just have to take what you can get.
A guy like Ted Hill, the Worcester captain, who's a, you know, I think he was the youngest ever captain in the Premiership, aged 18 or something. He's still, you know, he's still only 20, 21. He's in and around the England squad. Brilliant player, brilliant leader. England have a policy, you've got to play rugby in England to be selected for England. So if Ted Hill can't play for an English club, if he's got to go to France or Japan or Ireland or, I don't know, Scotland or to play, or Wales, to play, to earn a living, and that thereby makes him ineligible 1 year out from a Rugby World Cup to play for his country. So there's another little element. I mean, you know, you'd hope somehow they'd find a way for a player like that to be squeezed in somewhere. But, you know, it's really, really difficult. And it's not just the players as well. It's the, you go to these clubs on a weekend, and the real people that make these clubs tick are the people that turn up every week and, you know, look after the fans, sell the hot dogs, the groundsmen, you know, the people who run the car park, all those individuals that get paid next to nothing, but it's really important to them. They're going to be out of work and a livelihood as well. And it's the real heartbeat of these rugby clubs, which makes them tick. And, you know, I really feel for them too. You know, on a professional level, terrible for players and coaches. But, you know, at the end of the game, sport's about the fans, right? And, you know, there's a lot of passionate Worcester Warriors supporters who might not have a team to follow next season.
It's really, really crazy, and the tragic events. And then that's probably my next question, is that there's now a question mark over Worcester. Hypothetically, a question mark over WAS and them, to do slightly different financial reasons with their bond and you know, the pandemic affecting hotel, casino, other things attached to it as well. But if you're CVC and you have such a big financial stake in this competition and in the Premiership, are you potentially considering pumping money in to try and solve this problem to not hurt your investment? Or do you think that's too, you know, too big an ask, or that's potentially the only knight in shining armor as such that I could potentially see here?
Well, they've got the money. We know that much. I mean, the amount of money they, the amount of, you know, 500 million or whatever they pumped into Six Nations, PRL, you know, in order to get commercial rights over those leagues. You know, they got some cash floating around. Yeah, why not? Good idea, Alex. Get on the phone. You must know someone there. Get them to get involved and save the Worcester Warriors.
Private equity, mate. Exactly. I think that might be the only way, because really, like you said, even with the business of Premiership Rugby, no one's really making a profit or turning over real revenue that they're banking. And it's more the valuation of the investment and the brand and, you know, the club and the league, which accumulates over time, which these owners reap the rewards of. So, you know, if there is a play here to be made, that to me is probably the only way out that I can see, is that private equity comes in and, you know, they're in it for the long haul and they eat some of these losses for the long-term return. And they're, especially if it's CVC and they're already in this, you know, it's a way of sort of protecting some of your investment. Because what will happen to the Premiership if all of a sudden two teams disintegrate? Is it valued less? Is it as attractive a property? Is it, you know, at what it once was before that? That's probably the big question mark.
Would it be a good look for them to do it, wouldn't it? I mean, I think they'd get a lot of street cred if they could come in and show some assistance like that. You know, in other sports, you know, with perhaps more monetary value to these clubs and perhaps more at stake. You know, you had during the pandemic here, you know, football is king here, soccer. And, you know, there was a big campaign for the rich Premier League clubs to sort of trickle down money down to the lower league clubs to try and, you know, keep them afloat because a lot of them were in danger of going to the wall. And, you know, some of them did. Derby County did last season. You know, so yeah, I mean, there's got to be a solution found. I think you're right. I think the ripple effect of this could not just stop at Worcester. Wasps are in trouble, you know, and it's worth repeating. There's only three or four clubs in the Premiership that operate at a profit, and that is a problem. You can't continue. Yeah. I mean,
and there's rumours of a few other teams that are struggling too. I haven't seen names, but I've heard murmurs of that. This isn't the end of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you played for Northampton. Northampton are a well-supported club. Leicester Tigers are a really well-supported club. You know, London Irish have, you know, played a nice new stadium which they share with Brentford Premier League, but they don't own the stadium. So, you know, they're, you know, that it's not like they're able to make instant profit of everyone who walks through the gates. You know, Bath are obviously a very well-supported club, but they want to build a new stadium. Exeter, one of the great success stories of English rugby, are backed by Tony Rowe, who's a bit like a Cecil Duckworth character, just puts his heart and soul and a heck of a lot of his own money into it. Bruce Craig at Bath's been so important. You need a sugar daddy or a sugar mummy, if you like, to look after these clubs. And if that person at the top isn't prepared to see a lot of money drift out the door for love, for the love of the game, for the love of the club, then you can be in trouble. And I think that's the feeling about these, you know, Cowboys, as Ollie Lawrence referred to them being at Worcester Warriors. The feeling is they're perhaps not those kind of guys.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that. It doesn't seem like they are in the same mold of the Cecil Duckworth sort of model, which was, you know, really what brought that club to, you know, the point it is today, and the fact that it is a Premiership side, never finished higher than eighth, which is probably a frustration for them. But since coming up, you know, been relegated once or twice, but been a mainstay, you know, in the Premiership for quite some time. And, you know, it's a sad way to start what is going to be an exciting on-field Premiership rugby season. You know, I think we're going to have to do a full show previewing the start of the Premiership when it comes. But, you know, it's going to be another competitive league this year, Rupert, and it's tough to see things like this detracting from a lot of the positivity that we know we're probably going to see on field. I thought last year was 100%. One of the most exciting Premiership campaigns to watch, bolstered by proper fans and crowds again after the pandemic. It seemed to be on a massive high.
100%. I mean, look, the scenes at Twickenham when Freddie Burns knocked over that drop goal to win the title for the Leicester Tigers, first time in a long time. I mean, you know, and they're a great club and it's great to see them back. It is a great product, the Gallagher Premiership. There is no doubt about it. You know, it tugs on the heartstrings. It has wonderful history. It is entertaining, particularly when the weather improves. It's tribal. It's got everything you need. Are there too many clubs? Are there too many clubs in the Premiership? Maybe. We only have 13 in the league at the moment because they've effectively ring-fenced it temporarily. You know, we understand promotion relegation is going to come back in the 23-24 season via a playoff. But look, Is it worth losing a club for, though? I'm not so sure. They've got to find a way to stop these clubs getting into such financial problems. They've lowered the salary cap, as we've mentioned, but perhaps more needs to be done because at the moment, the top line, the headline stuff, which we love, is perhaps being undermined by some real loose foundations underneath.
Absolutely. Like potentially a time to look, reinvent the wheel slightly and look for new alternative sources of revenue outside of the traditional metrics that, you know, these clubs literally are bound to of, you know, ticket sales, sponsorship revenue and TV rights. You know, is there another way for them to try and turn some revenue into the gate? Because right now, you know, they are all in a tough place. And I think that's a good place to probably leave this story, because I'm sure as even as we release this pod, there'll be more developments in the next couple of days that will, you know, change the story and we'll be having to do some sort of follow-up. So with that, Rupert, let's get back to the main reason we brought you in here, is to transition to the LA Sevens with a World Cup Rugby Sevens on the horizon. We have both those properties here on NBC Sports, which will be, you know, across Peacock TV and linear television as well. But, you know, Rupert, what do you make of, you know, this end of season sort of bash as such, as it's being billed, you know, with the LA Sevens as the final stop?
Well, it's actually worked out quite well for the LA Sevens, hasn't it? You know, the pandemic-induced postponements of this event, which was meant to be played earlier on in the year, ahead of the of Toulouse and London. Well, now it's the last event, so it, you know, it's the grand final, and the series title is on the line. So, you know, dignity is going to be rocking, I think, on the weekend. You know, South Africa have a very slender lead over Australia at the top. You know, if they have another terrible tournament, they could be overtaken. But I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sorry I'm not going to be there. I'm saving the vocal cords for the World Cup in Cape Town in a couple of weeks. But I think it's going to be great. I mean, South Africa, look, are in great form again, having had a bit of a dip on the series. They won the Commonwealth Games a few weeks ago. And I don't know if you saw the final against Fiji, but it was an absolute masterclass from the Blitzbox. I've never seen Fiji dominated in a cup final like that before. They hardly fired a shot. And South Africa just completely smothered them. And Neil Powell, their head coach, who's actually leaving after he's been involved with the team for a long time, after the World Cup in Cape Town in September, you get the feeling he really just wants to clean up as many medals and silverware as he possibly can before he goes.
His cabinet. He's just trying to stuff that cabinet with a last few. He's got that Olympic, you know, all sorts of medals that coming in here now and really stuffing the cabinet. I agree.
Absolutely.
You know, I saw the Commonwealth and I thought South Africa have, you know, found their stride. The way they defended Fiji and then just punished their turnovers was so clinical and ruthless. And that's really, you know, their sort of style of sevens rugby. But as you look here, Australia right on their heels, and then Argentina not too far behind in the mix as well. Fiji down a little bit, but they obviously were, you know, missed a few of the events early in the season, which obviously does impact the standings, with New Zealand being further down there, Samoa being further down because of some of those impacts. But what have you made as a series on a whole this year and the competitiveness of the competition?
Yeah, well, it was obviously skewed, the series, because we didn't have New Zealand until Singapore. They missed the first four events. Fiji missed the Spanish legs in Malaga and Sevilla. So they've come up with this system where your best seven events across the nine on the series are going to count towards your final total, which is why South Africa, even though they had an absolute shocker in Toulouse in France, where they only picked up 5 points and missed the cup quarterfinals, which they almost never do. Actually, New Zealand missed the cup quarterfinals for the first time in their history at that event as well. But that points total of five, you get 22 for winning it. Well, that's not going to count towards their total because it's your best seven events. So, look, it's been interrupted, you know, by no one's fault, just the situation that events have been cancelled and postponed. But I think it's been really exciting. I mean, when Fiji and New Zealand and Samoa, for that matter, turned up in Singapore, we hadn't seen them on the series for a while. It was absolutely brilliant. And South Africa had won four gold medals in a row, and then all of a sudden fell off a cliff. We mentioned how they've since come back into form, but you've seen teams like Samoa come back and look really good. Ireland, who are new on the series, look really good. USA, who are a sixth at the moment, I think, overall, you know, they're looking a little bit shaky, and they've got a very tough pool in Los Angeles this weekend. So what happens when you finish 10th at the previous tournament? You end up in a pool with New Zealand and South Africa. And Canada, actually. And Canada were actually really good at the Commonwealth Games a couple of weeks ago. Looks like Henry Paul's doing a really good job with them. So I think the series as a whole has sort of warmed up really well and become really exciting. It's all to play for in Los Angeles this weekend. Series title on the line. You got to say South Africa are favourites, but based on what we've seen in the last few events, I think anything can happen.
What an exciting way to set it up, Rupert. And I think, you know, that's a good place to leave it. There's, you know, lots on offer here. USA have been struggling a little bit with this. Mike Friday with a rebuild. He has a sort of some of his, you know, holdovers from before, but, you know, still real rebuilding that side. And they are really in a pool of death. We'll put the graphic of the pools up across here for everyone to have a little look. But it's going to be nonstop action this weekend at Dignity Health Sports Park, which is down in Los Angeles. Make sure you check out and get your tickets if you're in the area. And if you're not in the area, make sure you watch it on Peacock TV. It is live and on demand across there. And there'll also be, I think, a recap and highlight show that hit CNBC as well. So keep an eye out for that for everyone listening. But Rupert, thank you so much for your time here. It's been great to chat. You know, we look forward to hearing you on the calls for the Rugby World Cup Sevens. I'll be in studio making my hosting debut, so it should be an interesting one. And we look forward to hopefully hearing more from you soon.
Yeah, look forward to it, Alex. Enjoy that. Enjoy the LA Sevens this weekend. It's going to be hot, isn't it? I mean, I've been in Los Angeles in late August, and it ain't comfy at the best of times, so those players are going to really feel it. But great to be on. Great to talk to you. Great to see you looking so well. And, yeah, enjoy all the rugby coming up.
All right, everyone, that is a wrap on episode one. Big thank you again to Rupert Cox for coming on to break down the issue for us, giving us a bit of insight, especially into that Worcester story. We will keep you updated on next week's episode. We'll have a guest on who will give us all the sort of inside information and in the know update on that. But the big thing to look out for next week's episode is the LA Sevens review. We are going to be on site at the LA Sevens this weekend. We'll be walking around, getting interviews, getting post-match reaction analysis, all the things that you want to see from behind the scenes there. So make sure you stay tuned to the Scrum Down. This will be on NBC Sports YouTube page. If you're listening to this, that's where it will be. And if you want to watch it, make sure you check it out there. All the best from Alex Corbusier and everyone else at NBC Sports. We'll see you again next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.